And welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
This week we do not have free advertisement of the week, except that we have discovered that we do not like speed bumps in our neighborhood. Sam I Am
is right. What a pain.
They're supposed to be rated for 20 miles an hour, but if you do that, you actually have to go to the dentist because you just broke all your teeth. So don't believe the ratings on the speed bumps.
20 miles an hour means stop and creep over.
Oh, my goodness. Just the little things. I knew I could pull the ripcord on that one. So I'm going to spoiler alert our guest because my favorite line in the information I was sent about him is, sleep well. There is no climate crisis. I read it last night right before I went to bed. I was like, I think I will sleep well. That is fun.
Yeah, it's nice to hear somebody actually say it.
I know. Super, super good. So our guest this hour is Gregory Wrightstone. I'm going to find out if he goes by Greg or Gregory in about 5 seconds. But he is a geologist and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. And I have been dying to get the CO2 Coalition on here. It is a great group. If you do not subscribe to their, I don't know if it's a newsletter or just an email update or whatever, but I've been getting their stuff for years. And the whole time that I was in Congressman LaMalfa's office, he was always sending out things from the CO2 Coalition. So they do a lot of work in Washington educating our lawmakers. Obviously, it's only taking root on one side of the aisle, but they're working on it anyway. He is an expert reviewer for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the best-selling author of Inconvenient Facts, which I think is fun. The book, I mean, we could talk about that one too, but the other book that we're going to speak about today, and I have both of them linked on the website, today is July 26th, 2026, just in case we air this in the future and some of the stuff we talk about changes, but on the page for today, A Very Convenient Warming is the name of the book. How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. So we're going to chat with him about that. But the tagline on the bottom of the update I got was, sleep well, there is no climate crisis. And I thought, oh, thank goodness. Maybe we can move on. I doubt it, but it would be fun.
Yeah, because I thought we only had about, what, 8 more years left, according to AOC.
Oh, it's a lot less. It's a lot less than that.
Is it less than that? Yeah, we're right on the brink of catastrophe.
You pretty much don't even have to shower or change your shirt. It's not going to be that long.
We're on the eve of destruction.
There you go. I wrote a song about that.
Yeah, I think they did.
So, Mr. Wrightstone, are you Greg or are you Gregory?
Well, I'm Greg. With two G's, one at the beginning and one at the end.
Nice.
I saw Greg with one G.
God, I love it.
So
we knew a guy named Rick. He always introduced himself as Rick with one eye. The funny part is he did have an eye problem, and he really did only have one eye, but it was also spelled in his name, and he didn't really ever find that funny, but I did.
What do you call a fish with no eyes?
Well, I don't know.
Dinner?
Dinner.
So, Greg with two G's, how would you like to begin this? Because, honestly, this climate – how long have you been working on this, by the way? How about let's start there?
I'm a geologist, and I was one of the founding partners of an energy company, Mountaineer Keystone, back in 2011. We did work – I was one of the lead researchers in the fracking movement, identifying the Marcellus Shale of eastern Pennsylvania, co-authored the first comprehensive, probably the only one, on this, which is the largest gas field in the world by far. Things went south for the company, and I had to walk away, and I had to looking for something. I was always interested in climate change. I knew that some of what we were being told was wrong, and I suspected other things were, and so my first book was Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. It ended up being multiple times bestseller on Amazon in multiple categories. And I was driven to write that book. I said, what I want to do is do research. I'm going to look at the facts, the science, and the data. I want to look at the basic facts and see what the truth is. And what I found out, frankly, angered me. I found out that much of what we were being told about this so-called climate crisis was just absolutely disinformation. And that led me to write my first book, showing there is no climate crisis. But the second book really is, we've gone beyond that now to show that not only is there not a climate crisis, but rather by almost every metric we look at, Earth's ecosystems are thriving and prospering, and humanity is benefiting from modest warming and more CO2. So to borrow from the Christmas theme in the New Testament, I bring you glad tidings of great joy. there is no climate crisis. Sleep well. In fact, we had a series of billboards around the United States that showed a young lady resting comfortably in bed, and that was the theme, was sleep well, there is no climate crisis. And in fact, we the CO2 Coalition, launched an educational initiative here a few years ago. I'm very proud to be part of that. In our latest book, we're targeting students. A lot of homeschoolers love it. My latest, we started what's called the Sleep Well series. The first was a book that I wrote, illustrated book. It was called Chloe the Clownfish Sleeps Well. And there is this real thing called climate anxiety among the youth, the young people. These people are being indoctrinated into the climate cult at a very young age. And so we wanted to use illustrated, scientific-based comic books to be able to tell the truth about what's actually going on. And I'm very proud of this. You can go search. It's on Amazon. I think it's $7.99 or $6.99 for the book. Wonderfully illustrated. It tells the story of Chloe that lives on the Great Barrier Reef, and she can't sleep at night because she learned in school that her home and her family were in great danger from climate change. And we're able to tell actually the truth in this illustrated comic book. We have a full-time artist in Brazil that's very talented, just really, really good. So if you would just search for Chloe the Clownfish.
No, I just did.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. It is a super cute picture. I'll add it to the page for today because
the key is not only do we have this book, we have a free lesson plan that was drawn up by our senior education advisor, Dr. Sharon Camp, who is a doctorate in analytic chemistry. She was an AP science teacher and reader. And so we have these lesson plans that go along with it. And again, we've been embraced by the homeschool community because we're providing not only the books for free, but we're providing lesson plans so you can teach your children well.
Is this, and this is the one by Greg Zemlansky?
No, Gregory, you got the wrong Chloe. Chloe the Clownfish on Amazon.
Yeah, because I looked up Chloe the Clownfish on Amazon, and the thing that kind of had me wondering was it says this a child's book, they will enjoy reading and look at the pictures, but it says nothing about it. And I thought, here's another one. And here we go. It's a much better cover.
Yep.
Much better cover. But yeah, there are two books with that name. And this one, if you look, it's kind of ghosted in the bottom. It says CO2 Coalition on it.
That's it.
I like
it. It's really well done.
And there you are. It's got your name on it. There we go.
Woo!
Yeah. I was like, well, who's that other guy? And how'd he get your book?
Oh, right, Cowboy.
Yeah. So now this one's on here.
And we've got another one you can search for. It's called Foxy the Fruit Bat Sleeps Well. About
the fruit bat, again, he
can't sleep at night because, you know, his island's going to be underwater by 2050, and, you know, it'll be gone. It's just ludicrous. And that's actually one thing we could explore right now to show you one example of how your viewers are lied to about this. The Maldives island where Foxy lives is listed by the UN as the most at-risk island in the world, or chain of islands in the world, that's going to be underwater by 2050. Well, okay, 18,000 years ago, the Maldives, just like today, were just above sea level. 18,000 years ago, since then, we've had 400 feet of sea level rise. So the question you're asking right now, isn't it, why are these islands not under 400 feet of water? That's you're going, wow. And it's a geologic process known as accretion. And what happens is these islands, sea level's rising, and the corals ringing the islands can grow really quickly. They keep up with even really rapid sea level rise. And then the corals are busted up by storms, turned into sands. 80% of the sands ringing the islands and the beaches are from parrotfish that actually eat the coral. So it comes in one end, they digest the little bit of polyps that are there, and the rest of the coral goes out the other end as sand. And so it's really parrotfish poop. It's on, of course, my 7-year-old grandson loves that. And when we talk about parrotfish poop, you know, the little boys, they like that stuff. But
he said poop.
And so what we have is these islands. So the sands during storms gets washed up onto the island. Winds distribute across the island, critters move it around, and the island slowly grows. It's slowly, but geology is a very slow process, and it's kept up with 400 feet of sea level rise. So what they're telling you is, now, at the rate of sea level rise today, which is about 7 inches per century, by 2050, we'll have about another 3 inches of sea level rise. So what they're saying is, the last 400 feet of sea level rise didn't put the Maldives and the other islands underwater. But that next 3 inches, look out, they're going to be underwater.
Yeah.
Well, that's just ludicrous.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll wager you $1,000 right. You've never heard that before. And
no.
Neither have anybody. And it's those things, it's the hidden facts that they have to keep hidden from the public. To keep this narrative of this looming climate crisis in the news, but they have to silence people like me and my colleagues at the CO2 Coalition. They have to silence us, because if we're allowed to get this information out there, it's game over for the climate industrial complex. And people are thirsty for this information, for the truth. And that's what we bring to the debate.
Well, on the fact side of it, the part I've never been able to understand is you have these crazy predictions, you know, we're old, right? So, well, we are. I don't know about you. I don't want to throw you under the bus, too. But I remember in the 70s, we were all going to freeze to death. And it was an ice age, and then we didn't have the ice age. And then we were all going to burn to death, but then we didn't have that. And then it morphed into change. It was just change, kind of nondescript, and the global warming sort of faded into change. But all of these predictions, especially Al Gore and his stuff, none of that has come to pass. At some point, isn't that enough to blow up the – I mean, I'm sure you guys reference that all the time. What do they say?
Yeah. They don't. They just move along. Don't ignore the man behind the curtain. There's nothing to see here, and there's a consensus. They rely on consensus science instead of the scientific method. You hear a lot about, well, there's a consensus. No, well, there isn't. Number one, there isn't. And even if there was a true consensus, that's not how science is done.
Yeah.
And so science is done. It's not by consensus. It's not by groupthink. It's by the scientific method and critical thinking, and that's what we're trying to bring to the to students today. We're getting a lot of traction in the homeschooling community, also the charter schools that we've been able to connect. It's a tough nut to crack to get into public schools. These people are so thoroughly indoctrinated, and that's why we launched this. Our members of the CO2 Coalition came to me several years ago. They were concerned that their grandchildren, in some cases great-grandchildren, were being indoctrinated into this climate cult. And they said, we want to do something. And boy, have we. I'm very proud of what we've been able to do. We're actually making a difference. and people love it. We've had just tremendous grassroots support for our efforts. They say, we want to fund you, because we provide our materials to homeschooling parents and charter schools and public schools that we can get in at no cost. And so this is a great benefit to them. So we've had people reaching out. When I took over, we had 145 donors. Today we've got over 20,000. These are all individuals. We have some small family foundations. We don't get any funding from any of the energy companies or oil companies at all. But we do get lots of people wanting to support what we're doing, because we're actually making a difference. And at some point today, before we're done, I'd like to talk about what we're doing in the legal arena in Washington, D.C., in terms of what's called the endangerment finding and what we're doing there.
Okay, good.
But our educational outreach is really, really strong. We've videos also with that, with lesson plans that go along with it. I was going to work on today my next Sleep Well series book. It's called Melvin the Manatee Sleeps Well. and I'm calling you from Apollo Beach, Florida.
Oh,
perfect. We're on the Gulf of America. And just to the north of me here, within 3 miles, is a coal-fired power plant. And so the story is about, and all the manatees come in the cold, cold winter. When it gets really cold, they all aggregate there at the coal-fired power plant, because they're sending warm water out into this embayment where they, and there'll be 1,500 manatees gathered. I mean, it almost looks like you could walk across this embayment on the backs of the manatees. But they have to go there because the cold water, if it gets lower than 61 degrees Fahrenheit, they can go into shock and then death.
So they're not going to boil and die from global warming. They're actually.
But I'm surprised. Oh my God, surprised they haven't attacked that and said that it's a ecological disaster.
I know. I was kind of waiting for that too.
Manatees are all hiding from impending death.
Well, that's a huge discussion, because they were trying to close down the coal-fired power plant.
Of course.
And so on one hand, the environmentalists say you have to close down the coal-fired power plant because it's leading to this existential threat and planetary doom from emitting carbon dioxide.
Right.
And on the other hand, they say, well, if we shut it down, all these manatees, 12 or 1,500 manatees that are able to survive only because of the coal-fired power plant, well, what do we do? They're going to die. And so it's a real puzzle for them on what should we do. And that's what the story is about. It's about Melvin that can't sleep at night because the coal-fired power plant's going to be shut down.
And he's worrying about it.
Right. And so they're able to tell the story about, you know, how. So hopefully I'll get that done here this week. I was going to work on it today.
Do you have a storybook where the character is a sloth?
Not yet. Not yet. We have one right now called Holly that's in production. Holly the Holstein Sleeps Well. About a Holstein cow in Switzerland. You know, there's this huge movement away from cattle, because they're
right.
A great danger, because now they don't fart methane. Am I allowed to say fart?
Yeah, yeah, we like fart.
I just did. Okay.
This whole show, okay. We're just going to call it the Farting Show with Greg Greystone.
Right, right. So they don't come out that end. The methane comes out, they belch methane. It doesn't go back out the rear end, it comes out the front end by belching. And it's part of the fermentation in fermenting. They have four stomachs, and one of those is an anaerobic, no oxygen compartment. And they're able to eat and digest grasses. They're called a ruminant. And so the ruminants are buffalo, deer, goats, sheep, cattle, and they're all able to digest otherwise indigestible grasses and cellulose and convert that into something useful like milk, meat, things we need, and they're able to do that. But in that process, it's a fermentation process in the fermentation process, one of the byproducts is methane. And so I thought that was fascinating. But anyhow, the whole Holly, the Holstein, in the Netherlands, I was there 3 years ago in the summer. And because my first book my latest book, A Very Convenient Warming, was published in Dutch. So we went over to the Netherlands for a book tour. And in the Netherlands, there was a proposal while we were there to close down 50% of the cattle in the Netherlands, which is huge.
Oh, my God.
The second largest livestock country in the world, and they were going to cull half of them because of climate change.
Brilliant.
And it's just, yeah, again, some of the things that are being done are just incredibly stupid.
Yes.
And we were actually able to go to learn, just if I could, can you just one moment, you'll learn something here, we went to the city of Gouda. You would know it. You would, if you looked at it, that's where the cheese Gouda is made, and it's not Gouda in the Netherlands. In the Dutch, they call it Gouda. You got to kind of grunt a little bit as you say it. So that's the correct pronunciation of that cheese. While we were there, this is fascinating. While we were there in the United States and the worldwide, they were talking about this terrible heat wave in Europe, worst ever. Terrible, terrible heat wave because of climate change. Well, there was a heat wave in southern Europe. I was in the north of Europe, in Holland, in the Netherlands, and it was colder than all get out. It was June, and we had to wear a winter coat. So they don't advertise the cold that's unusual. They don't advertise the heat that's unusual, and that's by design.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Figures. We have to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get more information and more fun facts. How about that from our new best friend, Greg Wrightstone. He is with the CO2 Coalition. You're listening to We the People. And you can find all of it at wethepeopleradio.us.
If we had some global warming, if we had some global warming, it wouldn't be 20 below. It wouldn't be 20 below. If we had some global warming, if we had some global warming, I wouldn't be shoveling snow. I wouldn't be shoveling that blasted snow. If we had some global warming, if we had some...
Now here we have two real pioneers embarking upon a new career, capitalizing on this global warming hype. Yeah, they're the ones that brought you the left-handed hammer and tried to market a recycled pamper. You could say the Gullible brothers have always been the entrepreneurial type. But this next harebrained Gullible venture could be earmarked as the major clincher as to whether or not they'll be living it up in their retirement age. They put all they had into one bankroll, bought a bunch of land down at the South Pole, eagerly awaiting the impending doom of climate change, thereby being in the catbird seat in the new Florida. And I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean, but man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms.
Love it. Love it.
Just in case you need to turn your book into a musical.
Oh,
call Ray Stevens.
Let's do it.
Such a catchy song, and it's so stupid too. I mean, it's true. They've got whatever happened with Greta. What's her face? Is she still a thing?
Thunberg or
thumbnail?
Yeah, she's gone over to the pro-Palestinian Hamas anti-Israel movement. It appears she's completely dropped the climate change bandwagon, or what she was trying to stoke. Uh-huh. I haven't heard anything of her talking about for a year and a half or 2 years about climate change.
I haven't either. I thought maybe I just stopped listening, but she seems to have disappeared. Well, that's kind of too bad. I mean, she must have been a lot of good good fodder for you guys.
Yeah, but you know, what I'm seeing is that I've been saying for years now, one of the things that people that hear me is I've been saying for years, we are winning. I could feel it coming. I could feel it coming. Now it's really, really, we were facing strong headwinds. Now we've got the wind at our backs and people are waking up. I think the huge, huge percentage of Americans today doubt this claim of a climate crisis and human causes of this pending climate collapse. And I travel a lot, talk to a lot of just random people, and just about everybody I talk to is just thirsty for this information that we provide to them, the truth, the science, the data that says no. We don't have dangerous sea level rise. And by almost every metric you look at, modest warming and more CO2 are benefiting our ecosystems. And it's really a truly great feel-good story. And it's not just a story, it's a factual narrative. And again, they have to silence us, because once we get that out there and the people understand, I said it before, it's game over for this climate industrial complex. And probably the greatest benefit, it isn't probably, I think it's clearly the greatest benefit that is accruing to the human condition and humanity is that of huge increases in our agricultural productivity.
Yes.
And it's huge. California's benefiting from it. All of America, almost all of the world, from the coldest to the warmest countries, are seeing record-breaking increases year after year of agricultural productivity. The crop production increase is exceeding and outpacing population growth by a lot. And there are a few things that go into that. One of those, you say, warming, we're in a warming trend. We are. It's been warming for more than 300 years, but only since the mid-20th century have we started adding a lot of CO2 to the atmosphere that could have any influence on the warming. And so we had 200 or so years of warming that was naturally driven. But this warming trend that we're in, if you look at it, growing season in the continental United States since 1900 has increased by 2 weeks. That's really, really good for agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Killing frosts earlier in the spring and arrive later in the fall. And then that's turbocharged by increases of carbon dioxide that, of course, you know, photosynthesis, what do we need? Water, sunlight, and carbon dioxide. And the more carbon dioxide, the better. And that's just fueling. What we see from this, what's happening with that? We're seeing the forests are expanding. The earth is what we call greening. In other words, vegetation has exploded over the last 40 or 50 years because of warming and more CO2. And also there are side benefits of activated nitrogen in the atmosphere from the burning of fossil fuels. And that's one thing we're just looking into right now, that also is turbocharging forest and grassland and crop growth, is this additional nitrogen that's in the atmosphere that could be consumed and the plants need. And so it's truly, truly remarkable and really good for the human condition.
What's the response that you get when you testify on these these issues? I realize that's kind of a broad question, but in general, are you met with a lot of resistance?
We don't get too many opportunities. We take every top opportunity we can to testify, but usually this is a Republican Democrat issue. Democrats almost to a person, at least in office. Subscribe to this man-made catastrophic warming narrative. The Republicans are very open to what we call climate realism and what the facts are about climate change. So, I've testified in Pennsylvania, and also Wyoming, Montana. We've testified before on Capitol Hill in Washington. And they're usually, the people running these are typically on our side or we wouldn't be invited. It's been good, but for the most part, forget about testifying. It's just the general average person in the United States is really, really responsive to what we have to say. And if you give me you give me 10 minutes with someone, I can convert them. Maybe 5% of the true believers know, but people haven't heard and don't understand the information that we provide, and it's in my most recent book, which is Convenient Warming, A Very Convenient Warming. And so it's both A Very Convenient Warming and Inconvenient Facts have been hugely popular.
In your books, do you directly address the bogus information in Al Gore's book? In your last books, Inconvenient Facts. I mean, Al's book has been out long enough now to pretty much debunk everything in it. There's been enough time gone by where, I mean, he gave dates and time frames on when this was all going to happen, and none of it came true. So
I don't directly do that because a lot of what he said is confronted in the books, but I didn't want to do that because I felt it was, by the time I was writing these, it was already, you know, 15 years out of date. I like to be topical. Mm-hmm. and more up to date. We were able to use similar, more recent arguments from other people.
Right.
Okay. And my job as a scientist, and people, you at some point today, you were going to ask me, well, why are they lying to us? That's a great question. And well, my stock answer to that, well,
and control, you know, I guess.
Yeah, they're, we come up with a lot of different, why are they doing it? I can't see inside men's and women's souls to see what their motivation actually is. But as a scientist, that's not my job. My job is to say, okay, here's what they're telling you, and this is the truth. This is completely 180 degrees opposite of what you're being told. That's my job as a scientist, is to provide the truth about that. And that's what I do in my two books, is provide that. And very easily, don't think these books are scientific treatises that are difficult to understand. They're definitely not. They're very, very readable. The charts, I've got 90 colorful illustrations in both books, that are the regular Joe and Jane on the street that's not a scientist has no problem looking at these charts and understanding them.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because I know there was, I don't know if Al Gore's book was the beginning of all this craziness. I think it came along after this had already been well underway. But to come out with such outrageous statements and get everybody all worried about falsehoods, I mean, it was blatant. And, of course, he had scientific professionals that backed him up. You know, I mean, I think he called it the scientific community agreed with
him. Well, yeah. Yeah, the consensus backed him up. No, it doesn't. And in fact, right in front of me, I'll hopefully have a review tomorrow. We've got a report on Montana and climate change. And there was a court case. It was called the Climate Kids versus Montana. It's Held versus Montana. And we've done a complete expose on that. And the court said that, man-made climate change was real. It's leading to increased heat waves, increased fires. Just a whole litany of things that the court said was true, and we go through and we provide the information. It says, no, it's not. This is what the facts are. They were claiming increased floods. No, there are no increased floods. Increased forest fires. No, they're actually declining. Heat waves peaked in Montana and across the United States in the 1930s, and the heat waves today are nothing like they were back then. And it's just, we were able to go through, and we're doing this on a state-by-state report. California's in the mix coming up. We just started working on that. So we're just debating now if we want to break California up into Northern California and Southern California, since the climates are so different there. But that's right now we're working through that right now. And the other thing that your listeners, I find people are hugely interested in, one of my favorite parts of this is the interrelationship and the correlation between human history and temperature history. And we find that the warming periods dating back to the first great civilizations, there have been three great warming periods going back to that time that were warmer. Each of those warming periods were warmer than it is today. And each one correlated with the rise of great civilizations and empires. And it's the intervening cold periods that were absolutely horrific to humanity. Each, as it started getting cold, the first warming period was called the Minoan Warm Period. It correlated to the Bronze Age. The first great civilizations rose up. The Hittites, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, in the Indus River Valley, the Harappan Empire there. And then they all collapsed. It was called the Late Bronze Age Collapse. When it started getting cold, all of those civilizations collapsed. And it was due, we see it time and time again, when it started getting cold, with crop failure, famine, mm-hmm. pestilence, and mass depopulation. Not good. So I will tell you that, you know, we should welcome the warmth and fear the cold.
Yeah, which just absolutely makes sense. We shouldn't really have to tell people that, but maybe it's kind of a Darwin deal. Let's take a really swift break. We're going to come back with our guest, Greg Wrightstone, from the CO2 Coalition. And you can find it all at WePeopleRadio.us.
So don't delay, act now. Supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive. 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow them, it be out tomorrow. But if the offer's shun, you might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
Talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. They're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment.
I think Dire Straits hit that one out of the park. They were way ahead of their time. Another option for your musical. Alex had a question for you before we went on our break.
Oh, yeah. So, in regards of predictive programming in movies and television, you have movies like 2012, The Lorax, M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening, that kind of seed in this climate change
narrative.
Narrative, yes, good. do you have any comments on that?
Well, they're all, it's part and parcel, isn't it, with that woke agenda that we see weaving its way in and out of all these movies. And although climate change isn't normally thought of as woke, it's probably part of this left-wing movement that distorts science, you know. They're telling us that boys can be girls and girls can be boys, that men can give birth, which is completely anti-science. And what the science and what they're talking about climate change is anti-science. It's disinformation that they're spreading. And you know, that's our job at the CO2 Coalition, to provide the facts, the science, and the data. And if you want to learn more, our website is co2coalition.org, co2coalition.org. And if you want to learn about our education materials and get some of the free books I was talking about, that's co2learningcenter.com. Go get your free downloadable PDFs of the lesson plans for each of these. We want to make it easy for homeschooling parents and charter schools to get the information they need. that's been vetted by true scientists.
That is so cool.
Which we are.
That is so cool.
Give the website again, please.
The CO2coalition.org, CO2coalition.org, and the educational site is CO2learningcenter.com. Really good stuff there. And you can go on the learningcenter.com. You get the fun facts. We have an artist in Brazil that's really talented. You saw Chloe the clownfish, the image.
I'm looking at it right now. It's cool.
Yeah,
notice I used the word cool.
Well, Chloe, now you don't know, you may get a picture of me up on your website, but I've got a blazing silver mustache, and it's kind of my trademark when I talk, and people recognize me because of it.
Yeah, so
Tiago, our artist, Chloe's father, there's a scene there right at the beginning of the book. He put a silver mustache on Chloe's father, and it's kind of fun. Also, in one of the videos, I do the voice of Mr. Fish, and he put a mustache on Mr. Fish too, so white mustache. And so we have some fun with it. We're not just really serious science. Well, we are science geeks, but we have some fun doing what we're doing because we're educating the people. And again, it's really, really worthwhile. I think it's so great what our people and our team have done there so far.
Yeah, you guys do put out really, really good information, and it isn't a bunch of It's not two things, right? It isn't super political, and it also isn't preachy, and doesn't make people feel stupid that maybe they don't know a huge amount of science. It's kind of like science for normal people.
Yeah, and now, Brim, we are the preeminent scientific organization in the world that's going against this climate consensus narrative of a climate crisis. We've more than 200 of the top scientists in the world, Nobel laureate in physics from California, John Clauser. We've just truly great scientists, and that's our thing. I made the decision when I took over in 2021. I said, we're sticking to the science. We're going to stay out of politics where there's no place for that. We want a scientific organization that's accessible to the public, that we only do science and stay out of the place. So we're not an activist group. We don't do that. What we do is provide the science. And one of the things you might be interested in is we had a great short report, well, 20 pages. It was on chemtrails. It's titled Chemtrails or Contrails by Dr. Roy Spencer, who was at the University of Alabama at Huntsville, truly great physical climatologist, meteorologist, physicist, and it tells you the truth about what actually is happening. And those aren't chemtrails you see in the sky; those are contrails, precipitation of water, the water vapor predominantly. That's when you burn jet fuel. There's a little bit of soot, and that's released along with the water vapor. And it's that tiny bit of soot that the water molecules condense on. That's what you're seeing. And so it's very well documented. The science is sound and settled. There isn't this grand global conspiracy that is spreading sulfates or whatever they claim is coming out of these jets.
Oh, it's heavy metals. Yeah, barium and strontium. And
yeah, so it's a...
We have a guy who lives, Dane Wigington, who would be the... Yeah. Okay, you're right.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
One of the things he says, one of his arguments, well, there's aluminum in the rock all over. All right. Well, yeah. Okay. The aluminum, clay minerals are aluminosilicates. And we have dust storms that come over from the Sahara Desert that include clay particles are very, very fine. That's the micro-sized things that are being swept over with the dust storms, clay minerals, and that's what it is. How can you get aluminum up on, you know, across all the United States, the Rocky Mountains? Well, that's how. We just saw Sahara dust just recently again, and there's not a lot of it, but over the years it accumulates, and that's one explanation. And also, the United States takes these contrails very seriously because. And in this report, if you search for it, go to CO2coalition.org and just search for contrails or chemtrails. And what they do is they show images of World War One with dogfights, with the, you know, the biplanes with contrails behind them. And we also are stealth aircraft. They take this very seriously, because if you have a stealth aircraft that's putting out a contrail, they're not very stealthy anymore. And so they work this whole thing out where you have to be at the right altitude. It all has to do with the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere and the altitude you are. And but it's a great resource. Look it up and find out.
Well, that's fantastic.
Again,
because
don't buy into this. Don't buy into this at all.
You have to understand that Voldemort lives right here. Actually, the one show we did, the one guy was so pissed off about it, we referred to him as He Who Shall Not Be Named for the whole show. I realized it used a little extra time, but it was kind of worth it. He lives here. Does a scare show.
Is that Wigginton?
Yeah. Does a scare show here. I've dealt with him a lot. I could tell you stories. But yeah, there's we are the epicenter of that, I'm sad to say.
Oh,
I know.
Yeah, it's
I've wasted way too much time on that topic, and there are people.
Exactly. Thank you.
There are a ton of people who, hey, I mean, good Lord. I mean, just a ton of people who are afraid to go outside. They're positive they're being sprayed, blah, blah, blah. Although I do believe the influence is waning. His whole thing was, you know, everybody's getting asthma. And I said, look, I have 30% lung capacity. If they were spraying us and it was affecting our lung capacity, I wouldn't be 65 years old and walking my dog every day. Like, that wouldn't be happening.
So that's just
illogical. Like, I'm your canary in the coal mine. It's not happening.
Well, think about the hundreds of thousands of people who have to be in on this, and no one's spoken out about it.
Oh, I got the answer to that now. You're not informed here. Have you ever been in the military? There's secrets you don't let out.
Yeah. And the government is super great.
These people that are all involved in this are very secretive.
Oh, they're paying off. I liked it that the pilots are all bought off. And I'm like, well, that's nice, but who's...
I like the secret airbase in Oregon where all the unmarked planes are landing.
I'm like, who's scheduling all these people, making sandwiches for them, cleaning the planes? You know, I mean, this is tens of thousands of people around the world, and they're all being bought off? Really?
Right, and if you're the CEO of Delta or Southwest, are you going to consent to having additives put in the fuel of your plane? Or, you know, we don't see, there are no jets these are contrails with condensation of water vapor, for crying out loud. And we've already wasted too much time on it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, it's pretty funny though, because there are, I mean, it's sad. There are a lot of people who are pretty apoplectic about that. And, the other guy who was really good about it years ago, he was the one who kept calling him Voldemort, was Jim Lee, the guy that made the climate viewer, the 3D climate viewer. And
I don't know that name.
Oh, you ought to look up the 3D climate viewer. It's awesome.
Really?
Yes. He has put, like, you can roll the world around, you know, like you're looking at Google Earth really from outer space, and you can roll the world around, and depending on the layers that you look at, you can see all the planes that are flying. He's got it all, like, networked in to the same viewer. It's actually very trick. Very, very interesting, but he was, oh, man, we did that with him years ago, and he was the first one to really come out and debunk a lot of his stuff with fact rather than just logic,
which was good enough
for me. But no, Jim's a really interesting guy, very up on all that. So we had a good time with him way back when. But holy cow, I can't believe we're out of time. See, we should have forced you to be on here for the whole time because there was more to talk about, darn it. But yeah, so we're gonna do this again, huh? We've got to do this again because this was super fun, and there just is a lot to talk about with the climate change thing because there are a lot of stories that they tell us all.
Yeah, there's still people out there spreading.
And unfortunately, it's really hard. It's hard for people.
I'm going to disagree a little bit because, of course, I'm a climate geek. And again, you give me 10 minutes with anybody, I can convince them. But that's why your listeners and viewers need to go buy my latest book, A Very Convenient Warming. Just two words, convenient warming, and you can find it. It gives, you can arm yourself with the facts with that. It's very easy to read. It's not dumbed down, and it's full of colorful charts that tell the story of what's actually happening. It's all fully sourced and referenced. Again, this is a I'm a science guy.
We have to run away, though, because the news is going to cut us off, which will be harsh. But we will be playing It's the End of the World as we know it, just for fun, and we'll talk to you later. Greg Redstone, thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio on July 26, 2026. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, our first hour, if you missed it, was super fun.
Yeah, go back and listen
to it. You should go back and listen. It was very informative. Greg Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition. What a good time. We will have him on again. 1 hour was not enough. And we're going to run out of time with our guests this hour, too. I'm just going to spoiler alert that for you. We have Ron Stein back again. We had him on with Mike Ariza. He is part of our gas crisis team. And if you have not plugged in on that and you think the whole gas thing is all solved, everything's happy and it's all fine, it's not as happy if you live in California. Might be looking better in other parts of the country, but here we are still dancing the blade of the knife. We have a dedicated page set up for that that'll take you directly to it at dedicated URL, I should say, at gascrisis.org.
Hey, I just want to check really quick.
What?
Do you still want the Newsom clip? Trump
clip? Oh, I forgot about it already. I didn't even sleep after you told me. Usually the excuse is I've slept since then. But apparently the president was on fire at the correspondents' dinner, and Alex has a clip for us, and I missed the speech, so we thought we should play it.
I was disappointed that Gavin Newsom didn't show up. He didn't show up. He should be here. But I heard that he recently said that we will lose our country if we don't fight fire with fire. And to be fair, there's only one thing we know about Gavin, and that's that he definitely doesn't want to fight fire with water. He's got a lot of water he never uses. What a disaster. That should have never happened. But Gavin Newsom recently did a career-threatening, one of the worst interviews I've ever seen, where he said that he can't read a speech. He's incapable of reading a speech. He's a low IQ person. He's smarter, however, than all of the people in the room. And then he gets sued for being a racist, okay, when he said that. But he basically said he has various mental incapacities. He has difficulty in various other ailments mentally. And I'm looking at him saying, this is the worst interview. I'm watching this interview. I said, this is the worst interview I've ever seen given by a professional politician. I've been watching politicians for a long time, mostly on the previous side, because I haven't been doing this too long. How am I doing? Not bad for the number of minutes spent. Not bad. But with Gavin, so he said that all these things, and I said, anybody running against him, all they have to do is take that one interview and you can't lose. I actually put out a statement that Gavin Newsom has come out and said he will not be running for president because nobody can say what he said about himself and survive. Newsom was in big trouble when he openly admitted that Kamala was smarter than him. He said, Kamala
Ouch.
Is smarter. If Kamala is smarter than someone, you don't want that person to be president of the United States of America.
Or anything else.
Between California's policies of enabling wildfires, paying drug addicts to be homeless, giving free sex changes to illegals, and telling rich people they're going to take away, all of your money is going to be taken away. People are fleeing, and they're fleeing in droves. We can't have that in this country.
That's it.
Oh, my God.
Now, when he said that Newsom was smarter than anyone else in the room. Priceless.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. And you know, he didn't even get into the whole gas thing. You know, he's taken a state that was energy independent and put it on its knees.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry, I forgot about that little clip he had for us there. Now we move forward with our guest, Ron Stein, who is an energy literacy consultant. Dear God, don't we need more of those? And don't we need them all working in Sacramento? Actually, that would be fantastic.
Oh, we need somebody to listen to them.
He's an energy consultant on energy literacy, an ambassador for energy and infrastructure, the co-author of the Pulitzer Prize-nominated book, Clean Energy Exploitations. I just like the title on that one and the whole topic. Policy advisor on energy literacy for the Heartland Institute and the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. He's also a national TV commentator and energy and infrastructure with Rick Amato. So he has just done a million things. You can find a lot of his work at AmericaOutloud.news. Terrific site, like just loads of information. So he's an engineer and just an all-around smart guy and just really looks a lot at the things that we all care about. I have his stuff linked up at the page here at wethepeopleradio.us on July 26, 2026, and also under our gascrisis.org tab. So you can find him. Don't tell me you can't find him. Mr. Stein, where would you like to begin today? It's all you.
Well, I guess it's all me. Yeah, the one thing that Newsom doesn't understand is that the economy, world economy, the California economy, is run on transportation fuel.
The one thing?
We need fuel for jets. We need fuel for the ships that are bringing products around the world. We need fuel for the trucks and for all the construction equipment. And wind and solar, which he has a motivation to move on, only generates electricity. Wind turbines and solar panels make nothing for society. And we are basically, you know, trying to drive out all the refineries. The one thing Newsom doesn't understand is crude oil by itself. Crude oil by itself is useless. It's black tar. Mm-hmm. Nobody uses crude oil. But if you build a multi-billion dollar refinery and they heat it, they beat it, they crack it, they do all these crazy things to it, then you get transportation fuels for the jets, the planes, the ships, the trucks, the cars, et cetera, and you get the oil derivatives that makes more than 6,000 products in our daily lives that didn't exist 200 years ago. So if you want to really get rid of oil, we're going back to the 1800s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I read an article the other day about this whole crisis, and they kind of zeroed in on the diesel fuel that if we don't do something about the cost of diesel fuel continually going up, it is going to be reflected in everything we buy. And people, I don't think, connect the dots on that. They see diesel prices going up, and it's like, oh, well, I'm glad I don't drive a diesel car. Well, it doesn't stop there. I mean, go to the grocery store. I mean, anywhere you go, it got there in a truck. And so the diesel fuel situation, they got to get that under control, and they got to get it under control fast because it's going to cost people a lot of money.
Alex, you're 100% correct. The one thing that people don't understand is California, we are demanding 58 million gallons of transportation fuel every day.
Every day.
Within California. 58 million gallons. Now, that includes 11 million gallons of jet fuel for all the military airports and the commercial airports, international airports, 10 million gallons of diesel, you know, for all the state's trucking and the construction equipment, and 37 million gallons of gasoline for the state's, 36 million vehicles. And with the two refineries that have recently shut down, California is in a dire strait because all that fuel, all the 58 million gallons of fuel is made in California. If it's not made in California, it's going to be made somewhere else. The reason being because California is an energy island.
Mm-hmm.
We're separated from the rest of the country. There's no pipelines from the rest of the country to California. We supply most of the fuel to Nevada by pipeline, most of the fuel to Arizona by pipeline, but there's nothing coming to California.
And that was by design. And, I mean,
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Well, you want to get a permit, put some pipelines over the Majestic Mountains, the Sierra Mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah, try that. And, yeah, so all that fuel is made here, and if it's not made here, it's being made somewhere else. And that somewhere else is offshore refineries. And offshore refineries, you know, California's got the cleanest refineries in the world. Offshore refineries are heavy polluters, so you're going to make it in Asia, put it on a ship, and transport it 30 to 45 days over the Pacific Ocean to bring it to California. And those ships are polluting, but Newsom doesn't breathe that air. He only breathes air within California. And so all that pollution is occurring, and we're bringing all that fuel into the ports. Now, the other challenge is we got three of the busiest ports in the country, in Los Angeles, Long Beach, and Oakland. And those ports are not designed to bring in transportation fuels. They don't have the storage tanks. They don't have the unloading capability. And if they have to get storage tanks and permitting, that'll take probably 10 years to get the permit, another 10 years to build it. So we're in dire straits. And we're starting to import now, and it's a real challenge. And we got seven refineries left, and they're big ones. And if one goes down, we're going to be in deep, deep, deep trouble.
Yeah, we're just on the knife's edge right now as far as being able to supply people with fuel. I don't know what it's going to take, probably pulling up to a pump and having no gas. You know, I've seen that happen before.
But the hard part is people dealt with this in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as the oil came back online, poof, there was, you know, gas station, everything was fine. I mean, it rectified itself. It was a huge pain during the time period it was a problem, but it rectified itself pretty quickly. If we wind up taking these last refineries offline, we were talking to him a couple weeks ago, and we asked Mike. We said, so if everything was perfect, you know, if you had all the guys you needed to run it, you had no structural problems, if it was 100% focused on just bring it back online, everything's good, how long does that take? And he said 8 months. Well,
8 months and probably about $1 billion investment.
Well, we didn't even get into that, but it's like just from a time standpoint to fix, like to get Valero, say, for instance, back online, because that's one of the big things we keep seeing now is we've got to get Valero back online. What do you think about that?
That's the way to go because, you know, we don't need refineries. We need the products they make.
Yes.
You know, the analogy is kind of like a restaurant. If a restaurant serves bad food, you stop buying, going to the restaurant, the restaurant goes out of business. If you really want to put the refineries out of business, stop using the products.
Yeah.
But Newsom's not going to say, we're going to close the airports, we're going to close the hospitals, we're going to close the shopping centers, we'll stop using those products, we'll put those refineries out of business. That's one way to do it.
Well, he didn't have any problem telling people a couple of years ago that owned electric cars to please don't charge them under certain conditions. Only charge them at night in between these hours. And just admitting that, how does he see California being all electric when we can't even support the electric vehicles we have on the road now?
Well, when you talk about going all electric, if we had wind turbines and solar panels, go into a shopping center, go into a hospital, go into a restaurant, you know, go anywhere, try to identify one thing, just one, that was made by a wind turbine.
Yeah.
They don't make anything. They just generate electricity. You know, And if you really get down to it, electricity came after oil. Let me explain. We've got six ways to generate electricity. You can do it by wind turbines, solar panels, coal, natural gas, hydro, nuclear. All six ways to generate electricity are very similar. They all have wire, insulation, computers, et cetera, et cetera, which are all made from the oil derivatives from oil. So if you get rid of oil, you get rid of electricity. We're back to the 1800s.
Yep. You know, we had a situation last week. My mother stays in a assisted living facility. It's a very nice place. It's three stories. And we were sitting there having dinner with her, and power went out. And it's like, oh, well, then it was off. It seemed like for, you know, not very long, you know, 20 seconds or so, and it popped back on. That's no big deal. Well, what I didn't know was that it came back on. It was their auxiliary power, which there was a problem with the grid. They lost their power. Their auxiliary system kicked in. Okay, now we're running on diesel. And they don't produce enough electricity for that facility to run everything at 100%. So you're on standby power. Well, this is a three-story facility. It's got several elevators. And I think there was only two elevators that ran on auxiliary power. And when you're dealing with elderly people, you're not going to tell them to take the stairs. They can't. So now they're stuck on the ground floor. Can't get back to their room.
And the other
ones
are stuck upstairs.
And yeah, the other ones are stuck upstairs.
And we live in a place where it's over 100 degrees.
Yeah.
In a three-story facility with no power.
Yeah, major problem.
You could just see the cascading effect.
Yep. If the grid went down, it's amazing the things you don't think of right now. But when the power goes out, you're screwed. There's a lot of things that you're just not going to be able to do until the power comes back on. We're totally dependent on it.
I'm going to give Ron 2 minutes to think about it while we take a break, but I want your best guess about how many people do you think, just ballpark, the percentage of people, how about, who realize that you need oil to have electricity?
Mm-hmm.
Because I truly believe there's a bit of a disconnect, but that could be because I'm basically optimistic, but I'm deeply suspicious. So I think with that combination, that makes me kind of negative on that one. So when we come back, we're going to get the Ronstein primer on that one.
Also, you might want to look at these standby or these charging stations for cars. How many of you have seen that didn't have a little standby generator in the background in case
they needed it? Now you're complicating
my
question.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We're going to take a really
quick... It's a flawed system.
It's live radio. We're going to come back. We have to take a little quick break here. We have a fun song for you for Gavin Newsom, just, you know, to wrap up that correspondence dinner that I really do have to go see the video of that. Alex has promoted that, and I've been remiss. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I've been stopped. I've been gold. I've been yes, and I've been oh hell no. I've been rock and roll and disco. Won't you save me, San Francisco? I've been up, I've been down. I've been so damn lost since you're not around. I've been reggae and calypso. Won't you save me, San Francisco? I've got the power.
They should just stop inventing new music. The old music was so great. I feel sorry for people writing music now. All the good music's out there. So, Mr. Stein, what do you think?
Yes.
What percentage of people out there do you think really understand how electricity is generated?
Well, let me say this. The analogy you're talking about, assisted living. Can you imagine a surgeon having to check the weather report before he schedules surgery?
Right.
Yeah.
To see if the wind's going to be blowing and the sun's going to be shining.
Yeah.
And you may not be able to do it at night. So, yeah.
If you get injured at night, you're doomed. Goodbye.
Lights are out. Well, the situation with wind and solar, it's a redundant way of generating electricity. And it's obviously totally dependent on the weather, the sun shining, the wind blowing. And so if the sun is not shining and the wind's not blowing, yes, you need a backup system. And, you know, because the economy runs on continuous, uninterruptible electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know,
natural gas is, coal is, hydro, nuclear. And it's the interesting thing, especially here in California, California in, well, basically all of America is watching the world movement for nuclear power generation. You know, currently there's like, I think, 80 nuclear power plants under construction around the world, not in the United States, in other countries. You know, 37 in China, 8 in India, Russia's got 5, Egypt's got 4, Korea's got 4, and we're doing nothing. And if you want continuous uninterruptible electricity and emissions-free electricity, yeah, nuclear's the way to go. You know, public doesn't understand. The Americans have a 70-year safety track record of using nuclear. All the submarines, nuclear-powered. All the aircraft carriers, nuclear-powered, for 70 consecutive years. And yet, Elba Canyon, the last nuclear power plant, is on life support. It's being closed because we're going to use wind and solar to replace it.
Yeah.
What would happen if we actually did that? What's your prognosis if we actually took it offline?
Well, you're talking about artificial intelligence, data centers providing, you know, a lot of electrical demands. It's going to be really bad news. Yeah, the fourth largest economy. You know, we're the fourth largest economy in the world. And if we go down, the rest of the country goes with us. And we're right on the bubble. Not in transportation fuels, but electricity, because we've shut down so much of our electricity generation, coal-fired power plants, San Onofre, that California imports more electricity than any other state in the country. We rely on other states to generate the electricity, and we import it. So why do you think that with
the demand for electricity going up and going up very quickly, especially with these data centers. I mean, our demand for electricity is going to go off the scale. Why aren't they recognizing that and doing something to create a source of electricity that is not dependent on, you know, the wind and the sun and all that? Why do you think they're not addressing that?
Well, two answers. One is they're oblivious to reality. I go back to what President Trump was talking about. When Newsom speaks, he has an audience that has less intelligence than he does.
Yeah.
So that kind of speaks for itself. Yeah, they're just oblivious to reality.
Yeah.
There's no backup system. You know, if you want to go with wind and solar, do you really want to replace natural gas and coal and nuclear with wind and solar?
Mm-mm.
Can't be done. They do different things.
No. Wind and solar is great if you want to have an alternative source and add to the grid, the existing grid. But you can't get rid of the traditional ways of generating electricity. Heck, they're even trying to take out the dams, which is totally natural. They won't take those out. It just makes no sense to me.
You're right. You know, I often joke with people, you can't bring a logical question into this conversation.
Yeah, stop that right now.
The labyrinth of logic. There's nothing in there but sadness and despair.
Exactly. So it's going to be a challenge. And like I say, California, we're, you know, power-wise, we're going the wrong direction. We're trying to eliminate the generation of electricity, continuous electricity. And with fossil fuels, we're trying to eliminate transportation fuels, which runs the economy. If you want wind and solar, they require a lot of transportation, trucks and cranes and, you know, et cetera, just to build it.
Mm-hmm.
And the wind turbines themselves are made without fossil fuel products. Solar panels are fossil fuel products. Yeah, there is no substitute. We have, we're a materialistic society that we weren't 200 years ago. And, you know, 200 years ago, yeah, we had no oil, we had no electricity. And, I don't know about you, but I like the lifestyle we have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I just don't think people realize what will go away What are you hearing about the refinery thing in California? Any? Are people aware of that, do you think? Or what are you hearing in your circles?
No, they're not aware of it. There's 7 refineries left. There's 2 with Chevron, 2 with Marathon, and 2 with PBF. And then Valero has the 7th refinery. Now, Chevron, Marathon, and PBF, each of the presidents of those companies, they sent 3 separate letters, never been done before in the history of the world, 3 separate letters to Governor Newsom, basically saying, you keep up this over regulation, we're out of here.
Mm-hmm. We have those posted online for people to read if they're at all curious about that.
Because they're manufacturers, and, you know, they can go to a more business-friendly location to manufacture their products because it's people demanding the products. Again, if you don't want the refineries, stop using the products. But no one wants to do that. So we come up with more ways to use the products. We're using the oil derivatives to make wind turbines, to make solar panels. EV, 100% made with oil. The tires, the wires, the insulation. You know, what is not made from oil? The only thing it eliminates is one product. You know, we get about 6,000 products from raw crude oil, and they want to eliminate gasoline. Well, what about the other 5,999 products we get from oil?
Right.
Yeah, so again, back to the logical question. My whole purpose of the articles I write and the books I've written is to stimulate conversations. I would love to have all this stuff talked about in the upcoming debates when these guys running for governor, but the press is reluctant to ask these quote-unquote logical questions and get some answers.
Yeah, there's a huge story there, and they don't want to report on it, which just kind of flabbergasts me a little bit because, I mean, this is a really, really big story. The fuel shortages, the refineries shutting down, and nobody's talking about it, which...
You know, there's an analogy. Reducing transportation fuels really affects the economy. Now, Ukraine is doing it by sending drones into Russian refineries, and Russian refineries are having a problem manufacturing transportation fuels. So in Russia, there's transportation fuel shortage. Here in California, Newsom's not using drones. He's using over-regulations to drive out the refineries.
Mm-hmm.
So they're accomplishing the same thing in different ways.
Do you have any sense of why? I mean, that's always the $64,000 question is, what are they getting out of that?
I think a lot of the misunderstanding is the word energy. They keep referring to the wind and solar energy, and wind and solar energy versus fossil fuel energy. Hmm. Well, wind and solar only generates electricity. If you talk wind and solar, it's wind and solar electricity. It's not wind and solar energy. But wind and solar does something totally different than fossil fuels. Oil by itself is never used to generate electricity. You know, natural gas is, coal is, but oil, crude oil is used, since black tar. You remember the Beverly Hillbillies, you know, that black stuff bubbling up on the ground?
Black gold, Texas tea.
Texas tea.
Exactly. Yeah. No one uses oil, but you got to build a multi-billion-dollar refinery, and they heat it, they beat it, they crack it, they do all these crazy things to it. Then you can get transportation fuels for planes and ships and trucks and construction equipment and all the derivatives that makes everything in our daily lives. You know, electricity can charge my iPhone, but electricity cannot make my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that needs electricity, the iPhone, the computer, the defibrillator, the MRI machine, you name it, everything that needs electricity is made from oil products.
Mm-hmm.
So if we get rid of the oil, we get rid of all the products.
Well, we'll just We'll make just enough for the other products. We just won't make enough for fuel. Yeah, that's how that'll work.
Is that how you have it gamed out there, Bill?
Yeah, that's how it's going to work.
Huh,
yeah.
What a relief.
It won't be a problem.
At least somebody's planning.
Yeah.
But Alex, you were right when you were talking about, you know, supply and demand. If there's a less supply, then the price is going to go up for the demand that's there. And if it goes up, if diesel fuel goes up, aviation fuel goes up, airplane flights are going to cost more. The cost of bananas are going to cost more. And then people are going to complain, oh, we got to raise the minimum wage. Well, it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing that, like I say, confuses me is I think a lot of this stems from their dream of having everything in California electric, you know, lead the way. So have all electric cars, have all electric everything. We don't need fossil fuels. Well, that's great. But what are they doing on the other side to generate or create more electricity to supply all this extra demand they're going to have? They're not doing anything right now. They say, oh, we're going to have, you know, 10,000 new charging systems. But they're not there. They're not doing it.
No. The policies are basically demanding. Yeah. They're coming up with more ideas to use electricity, but no ways to generate.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're trying to create a disaster and then fix it at the last minute, but you can't. You can't take all this stuff offline and then say, oh, okay, now we're going to build infrastructure for all this new electrical demand. It's too late. You just crippled the economy, and that's going to take years and years to develop and get online, and they're doing nothing right now to create that or to fill that void, which to me sounds a little strange.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
But the other super crazy part is you will take this state out of the mix, but the other 49 will be operational. This isn't something that takes the whole – well, I guess you could pretty easily make a case it does take the whole country down eventually. But it screws our national security and everything else.
We have three of the busiest ports in L.A., Long Beach, and Oakland, and all the products are coming in from foreign countries are – trucked and trained to the rest of the nation, and if the ships don't have the fuel to get refueled, they're going to stop coming into the ports.
Exactly.
They don't have the diesel. The trucks aren't going to move the products. And when you talk about a national security risk, we got 40 military airports. And with that 11 million gallons of jet fuel being consumed every day, a lot of it's by the military. And it's scary to think that China refineries will be controlling our military airports. Yeah. They'll be making our jet fuel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's provided we can even get the fuel from China.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, and when you look at our airports, I mean, if these planes that are flying in and out of California every day, hundreds of times a day, if they can't land in California and get refueled and fly out, they're not coming. So we're going to turn into an island with no services. But we'll be electric and we'll be breathing lots of clean air. That's yeah, just crazy.
I think the solution would really be in the upcoming debates for governor. Mm-hmm. All the things we've been talking about should be the questions posed to the candidates to get their solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I say, the way we're going, it's a disaster for California and a real disaster for the American economy.
Well, wait until we have to foot the bill for all the research it's going to take to figure out how much electricity we're going to need. Kind of like our bullet train, you know, we've had that online now studying it now for, what, 20 years.
And the only bullet with that train is the one that aimed it for our wallets.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time I gas up, I think I'm funding the bullet train.
Yeah, what a relief.
I've been doing this for like 20 years, you know.
Yeah, gotta love that high-cost rail.
If California wants to go electric, you can't even go electric if you wind up getting rid of oil, because everything that needs electricity is made from oil.
Mm-hmm.
So So it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, we're just not ready for it.
Artificial intelligence, all the components within the building, the air conditioning for the building, the computers they have, it's all made from oil. Yeah. And we have no substitute for oil.
Nope.
We've had 200 years to clone it and been unable to do it.
Yeah.
And the confusion is they say, well, wind and solar energy is going to replace fossil fuels. It can't because they use totally different things.
Yeah.
Wind and solar only generate electricity. Oil makes transportation fuels and derivatives that makes all the products.
Right.
Like I said, two different animals.
Ron, what do you know about the fusion technology they're working on?
Hold on for 5 seconds, so we better take a quick break.
Oh, okay.
Because that's going to be that's a good answer, and it's a good question. Bill has a good question for you when we come back. How about that?
Okay,
We'll queue up Bill. Oh, you are listening to We the People, and you can find all of this fun information that will probably light your hair on fire just a teeny bit, but it's at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Energy. Sometimes I think I'm running out of energy. Seems like we use an awful lot for heating and lighting and driving, reading and writing and jiving. Energy. You think we'd be saving it up?
When you're in the dark and you want to see, you need a
electricity.
Flip that switch and what do you get? You get a
electricity.
Every room can now be lit with just a
electricity.
Where do you think it all comes from? This powerful
electricity.
That commercial break brought to you by Schoolhouse Rock.
Everything we needed to know we could find from a song from Schoolhouse Rock. Oh, my God. Bring them back. We need them. All right, Bill, wait. What was your question again?
Oh, I was curious, Ron, if you knew much about the fusion research that's going on and how far away are we on developing fusion for actual use?
Fusion is in the works. It's probably decades away, but more currently, nuclear is the thing that's really going on because we got, you know, the old nuclear reactors didn't really use much of the fuel, and so now we have slightly used nuclear fuel, but the newer technology of nuclear generators has taken that slightly used nuclear fuel and extracting it and using it to get, like, you know, 80 more years of use out of it.
Oh, okay.
And so we're looking at continuous technological improvements. Nuclear generation is improving, like you say, making better use of the fuel, and the SMRs, small modular reactors. South Africa and China are making great progress on smaller reactors that can, you know, sit them down like a portable generator. You can put it down and, you know, you might feed a community of, you know, a million people.
Right.
So the SMRs are also making progress. But that's we got to really focus on, conservation and efficiency. And
right.
I think the use of nuclear, as I mentioned, there's like 80 nuclear power plants under construction around the world, and they're going to be using better technology to use the fuel that they get. And the best thing about nuclear is that it takes the least amount of land, the least amount of Earth's resources, because, you know, the Earth's going to run out of oil at some time. You know, 50 years, 500 years, 5,000 years. But one thing for sure, this 4.5 billion year planet is going to be here with or without humans.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to basically extend the life of the resources that the Earth has. And if we can generate electricity and have almost unlimited electricity with nuclear, utilizing the least amount of Earth's resources, that'd be fantastic for, you know, the 8 billion people living on the planet.
Well, what's the prognosis to put, like, these small nuclear generators, like they run on a ship. Why couldn't you take one of those systems and park it like in a small town, run the whole town for?
See, now you're bringing a logical question into this conversation.
Oh yeah.
remember the labyrinth? There's nothing in there but sadness and despair.
They run these ships for, you could be out at sea for years on the fuel they have on board. Why couldn't they do it locally?
Well, exactly. Like you say, all the submarines, all the nuclear, the aircraft carriers, they're nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, they can do it, but we can't.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, there's a lot of questions that have to be raised during these debates. And I'm really hoping that a lot of these subjects come up during the debates, because that's the only thing, you know, you're going to get a lot of people listening to the debates, and hopefully they'll be listening to some of the solutions, the challenges, or the problems, and just got to get more attention, got to get more conversations going.
Yeah, I think there are solutions. They just need a plan. They need to put them into use.
Exactly. And the situation with America, we're not asking the questions. Mm-hmm. And if you don't ask the questions, you know, there's no silver bullet answer. I mean, it's going to take a lot of everything to make the world work, and to make it work efficiently and economically attractive and environmentally attractive. So it's, there's the simple solution. Well, wind and solar is going to replace fossil fuels. No. It can't happen.
No, it won't.
Yeah, you've got you have a never-ending supply of people to educate on that front. So I think
exactly. I focus on energy literacy, and I'm trying to just keep developing questions to stimulate the conversation. You got to start in schools. And, if they're energy literate, hopefully they won't be oblivious to, the realities that our current policymakers are pursuing, because they're implementing policies that make no sense.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no forward thinking going on here at all. And it's funny, because I think the common person out there can look at this situation we're in and come up with some pretty good ideas on how we can fix it, but our leadership can't come up with any ideas on how to fix it other than cut.
Well, and people keep electing them, so
yeah, and that's
well. You know, one of the things you mentioned, the book that I wrote, The Clean Energy Exploitations, that's something that should be part of the conversation, because the materials to build those EV batteries is lithium and cobalt. Well, lithium and cobalt is 100% controlled by China and Africa. And they've got no labor laws. They got no environmental laws. They're exploiting people of yellow, brown, and black skin to mine for this material. And the environmental degradation on their land is atrocious. But it's okay. We in the wealthy country, we're going green. Well, I think it's unethical and immoral to support China and Africa to continue exploiting their people. But Newsom just implemented a $3,500 rebate to encourage you to buy an EV. Well, if you're doing that, you're basically financially providing incentives for China and Africa to continue exploiting your people who have yellow, brown, and black skin. Mm-hmm. Continue environmental degradation on your land. California's going green.
Yeah.
It's unethical and immoral.
Yeah, totally.
But he doesn't look at that supply chain.
Yeah, the whole electric vehicle thing just blows my mind. I mean, I know there's a lot of them on the road, and right now we can support those. You can pull up to a charging station and get your book out and sit there for 2 hours and charge your car and drive off happy. But we don't have enough. There's not enough electricity being generated for everybody to drive an electric car, and they don't have a plan to change that.
Yeah, one of the things that we really, and the future I see, is two things. One is developing battery technology, just like the phones. The portable phones, if you remember, a couple decades ago, weighed about a pound, hold it up to your ear.
Oh, yeah.
Now you got the iPhone. The battery technology is advancing. If we can improve battery technology and eliminate the lithium and the cobalt and have a better battery and develop a lot of nuclear, then you have unlimited electricity and you're not using Earth's resources to make it. You're not exploiting any people, you know, to make the electricity. So if we can develop battery technology so it's easier to charge and we have, quote, quote, free unlimited electricity from nuclear, that would be a real, real good solution.
Yeah, that would work. But when was the last time you heard anybody talking about that? You know, there is
efforts made right now to come up with alternative batteries, and that's a continuous operation.
Yeah.
And so it's, I know it probably take a couple of decades to make it happen, but we'll have better batteries, and we got them right now on the iPhones, and they charge almost instantaneously, and same thing. I don't know if we'll ever get to the point of having an electric 747 flying into Europe. But
oh, God. Yeah, that's one of those.
If you run out of electricity, gravity wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gravity always wins.
Yeah, we learned that at the fair, right? The Gravitron. It's a new ride. They let you sit down now, and then they really get you off the ground. Oh, my God. Could you imagine? Yeah, I want to ride.
But I encourage people to ask these intelligent, logical questions to politicians. Ask them because they're the ones who are going to be holding the microphone. They're going to be the ones setting the trend and the direction of all the policies. And if they have no clue, we're in trouble. So you want to find out if they have any energy literacy, any understanding. If they don't, their policies will be disastrous.
Sure.
I don't know really. Spitballing, but if we do not have a change of regime in California with Steve Hilton, we won't see a change in any of this policy either.
I think you're right.
There's no way Javier Becerra, the corruptocrat who upended HHS at the federal level, I think people have kind of forgotten about all the stuff he did there. He rolls in California Air Resources Board is still going to be running the tables, and I don't know.
I had a chance to meet and talk to Steve Hilton a couple weeks ago, and went over a lot of these logical questions, and I'm continually providing him what I call ammunition to bring up during these debates because, even if he gets elected, he's going to have a problem because he's going to have Democrats, that are setting the policies that he'll be overseeing, and it's going to be an uphill battle. But the main thing is, how are you going to keep these refineries operating to keep the economy running?
Right.
And right now, that's the opposite direction of the current Democratic policies. They want to get rid of the refineries.
Yeah, and there's really no active plan to replace it. That's the scary part. And so the disaster is rolling our way unless they get on the bandwagon and come up with some alternatives. They're going to have to put those refineries back online.
Right. And right after the presidents of those six refineries sent their letters to Newsom talking about, if you're going to stop this overregulation, right after they sent the letters, the California Air Resources Board increased the regulations.
Yeah.
So the clock is ticking.
Sure.
It's really a matter of, which one's going to make that announcement that they're leaving. And once they do, they're reporting to their shareholders, and if it's too costly to manufacture products in California, they'll go somewhere else.
Well, sure, and they're going to have to come up with a solution that spans decades, because if they're going to make the investment to reopen refineries in the billions of dollars, it's going to take time to recoup that, and they're not going to come back in when the administration changes and then they change all the rules again. They're going to have to come up with some kind of a plan that protects them from that, and I don't think that's in the works.
Yeah.
You know, another point where California is going in the opposite direction is the United States by itself is a net oil exporter.
Mm-hmm.
California, because we're sitting on one of the largest oil reserves in the world, but because of our anti-oil drilling effort, the oil drilling is pretty much in a terminal decline. So consequently, all the refineries in California, we import about 70% of their oil needs from foreign countries.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Well, the United States is a net exporter, but we got no way to get that oil because it can't get over the Sierra Mountains.
Right.
Of course. Well, run
through the Suez Canal.
We have to run away. Can you imagine that? We burned an hour, but we did find a fun song about a jet airliner we could play for you on our way out to mull it over. Please get some energy literacy. Hit our site, and you can read all of Ron Stein's great information and articles at WeThePeopleRadio.us.